This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 72. Today, AC and CJ are going to talk about the March 2015 Azure announcement and app service, recorded live March 25th, 2015.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Andrew Connell.
And I'm Chris Johnson.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
Hey, CJ, how's it going?
Good, mate. Good. How are you?
I feel fortunate that we're able to actually connect. As we've been saying in some recent shows, that we knew we were going to start to have some problems leading into this conference season. And if anybody didn't notice, we did last week. We couldn't connect to get a show recorded.
Yeah, it was chaos and mayhem, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. It was. I know we were able to jump on the phone and get a few talk about business a few times, but
we couldn't wangle getting a recording done. So apologies for that.
Yeah.
Hey, I've also noticed like you're feeling a little existential today, AC. Like I noticed in your intro that you're talking about yourself in the first person.
Third person.
Sorry. Yes.
No, it's the fourth. I added them up.
Yeah. There you go.
I was wondering as I started to record it, I was like, wait a minute. If I say I and CJ, I wonder if some people may not know who I is because they may be new to the show. We're always trying to get new listeners, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Like, you don't want to take that for granted.
No, I guess not. But it's just us.
Yeah, well, I was just feeling a little, you know, like, hey, it's a change of seasons, feeling a little odd.
Mm.
You know, spring's coming. Mm. It's good.
Yeah. So what you been up to, man? How's it going?
It's been really good, actually. I have kicked off a small sort of side project with a contractor. I finally have given up on pretending that I'm going to write My Trips for iPhone myself.
My Trips being your Windows Phone app that is the client for the
TripIt.com. Yep, exactly. So I went on Odesk and hired an iOS developer just for a few hours a week. And he's going to do an MVP of My Trips for iOS. And it's going to be very disappointing. Let me just say that for anybody waiting. It's just going to be very, very basic, like, and very minimal, barely viable, and hardly a product.
So you're getting the M out of the MVP.
Yeah. Let's just say I'm going to be squeezing blood out of the definition of what an MVP is. But it's literally going to be, the first incarnation is literally going to be login on your phone, and it'll just have a single screen in the app which shows you your next flight from TripIt. And then, but it will also do the same thing on the Apple Watch as well.
Mm.
So you get like your next flight details and confirmation number and your flight status and things like that.
So testing the lower threshold of the MVP. How low can we actually go to get somebody to install it and try it?
Correct, yeah.
Are you going to charge for it or is it going to be free?
I haven't decided that yet. I don't know. Like I feel a little disingenuous making it a paid product, given it's so basic. I'll have to be extremely clear in the description if I do. But the flip side of it, if I don't, then A, there's not a lot of motivation for me to do it. And B, I'd like it to fund the development of more features in the app. So I think it will be paid. I just have to be very clear. Just not very much. It'll be like a buck or something.
Yeah, just enough to show people, get people to pay for it. And then, because I mean, if you end up going all the way with it to make it feature complete with the Windows Phone one, then by the time you get there, people who paid nothing for it today would get the free one. So
exactly.
It's almost like you want to have a discounted price now and then like a retail price later.
Yeah, and there's loads of other TripIt clients for iOS, right? The TripIt has one for, you know, their official app. It's not very nice, but...
Mm-mm. That's being quite generous.
It's not very nice, but it works. But so I'm sort of going for this is going to use some Microsoft buzzword bingo right now, but I'm thinking of like the snacky app version, right? Which is...
There's one.
Thank you. There's the golf clap. My North Star is the snacky app that I'm going to double click on.
God, I hate all those freaking apps. I hate those phrases you guys are using.
Oh, I have a...
You forgot cloud. Just throw it in there.
Oh, yeah. I have my Stormtrooper cookie jar in my office, which has North Star Jar $1 written on it, which means that if you say North Star in my office, you owe me a buck.
And you're not referring to the thing in the sky. directly referring to the thing in the sky, not like saying this is what we're aiming for, but like really like.
No. People at Microsoft use it to say what we're aiming for, but really what they're saying passive aggressively in disguise is that's what we're aiming for, but we've got a shit show in hell of ever making it. So we'll just call it our North Star and then we put it in a bucket and forget about it. It's generally what people mean when they say North Star. It's like, yeah, that's a great idea. We're not going to do that.
Oh, man. Not fun.
Anyway, I digress. But sorry. So yeah, so working on that. Just getting the most, you know, it's going to look like the rear end of a badger to begin with. I mean, it's
my goodness.
It's not going to be pretty.
Hold on a minute. I just got to go do a little Google image search real quick. My goodness, man.
Yeah. So
that was something I wasn't expecting.
It's not going to be nice. Hold on. Rear end of badger.
Oh, God, you're searching for
it. Let's see. Bing versus Google. Oh.
You're not going to do this,
yeah,
are
there's
you?
A couple of badges in there. No, it's not very good.
And they're animals. This isn't like, you're not doing like a picture of a person, right?
Oh, no. This is, yeah. This is, let's compare Google and Bing. I think Google is probably, no. Oh, Google's got, a badger is apparently like the rear diff of a car. Did you know that?
Uh-uh.
Gosh, we're getting way off topic here.
Yeah.
I'm feeling rather random today. I'm sorry about this, everyone. It's called a badger is a rear end bar, it's called, which is like the thing out of a pickup or a car or something.
Mm. Which you just did. You did, was it, Hanselman calls it a boogle? You boogled it.
I boogled it.
Yeah, or you bing, or you ginged it.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever. I hate those words he comes up with.
I googled for Bing.
Yeah.
Nice. So yeah, that's what I've been up to. Plus all the work stuff, of course, but yeah.
Yeah, work has been la crazy.
Yeah. How about yourself?
I delivered or I shipped. I guess I haven't shipped because it's got to get published. But my second course in my Office 365 API series I'm doing with Pluralsight on the contacts endpoint, I shipped that last week.
Nice.
So it's content complete. They have it pending any issues that I've got to go back and fix that they find. So hopefully that'll be out sometime in April. The goal is to definitely have it live no later than the start of the Build conference. So I'm crossing my fingers on that one.
Very smooth. Those things are a lot of work, man. That's really cool.
They are a lot of work. You know, I've been able to really cut down on my production process from all the workflow classes I did in the last like 2 years to the last two courses I did on the Office 365 APIs. Just as a bit of background for some people, like you wonder how much effort it is. The first four classes I did solo were ballpark on average about 110 hours for about, and that's start to finish to generate about 4 hours of content.
Mm.
It was about a little more than a 25, you know, a multiplier of about 25. But I've been able to get the last two, which are anywhere from like 3 to 4 hours, I've been able to knock it down to about an average of about 36 hours. So I've been able to cut it down to about 25% of what I was doing, which that's pretty, I'll take that. Yeah, so that shipped, and then I guess this week I'm in the midst of trying to. I came to a realization that I have a boatload of conference presentations coming up between now and June.
it's going to get silly season.
Yeah, this is like I have a month before they really get going because I'm doing. I have three shows in a row. I have the SharePoint Evolutions conference in London.
Mm.
That's in late April. Then I have I'm presenting at the Microsoft Build conference. And then I'm presenting at a workshop and a breakout session at Ignite. And then a few weeks later, I'm at, I think it's Angle Brackets in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Yep.
And this one's gonna be fun. I wanted to just mention this one. But the one in June, I'm actually speaking, talk about a coincidence and talking about great timing. So the SP TechCon guys have started a new show called Dev Days, Developer Days. And they're gonna hold that in San Francisco in June. I believe it's like June 24th. 4th through the 26th, I think, something like that.
Yep.
And I know your keynote for that conference.
That's correct. Yep.
But I had also, prior to committing to that, I committed to another conference that's kind of a Google conference. It's an Angular conference, and the Angular team from Google is going to be there. They're the keynote guys. But talk about a coincidence. It's the exact same week, but it's the first part of the week, and it's in the same hotel in the same city the same week.
Get out.
So I'm presenting on at the Angular conference on Tuesday and Wednesday, and then I'm switching over to SP TechCon Dev Days on Thursday, Friday.
Whoa.
And I don't even have to change hotels. I may have to change rooms because it's two separate reservations, but...
Wow, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, and there's only one bit of overlap. I blogged about it today, so if anybody's interested, go check it out. But there's no overlap in my content from... You know, it won't be, you won't get this. If you come to my session, you won't see the same thing in both of them. But if you're a Microsoft or Office 365 developer and you're doing web apps and you're looking to do things like client side or like Office 365 API stuff and Azure AD stuff, you really might want to check out the Angular conference in addition to the SP TechCon Dev Days conference. So like the workshop that I'm doing all day with the Angular conference, it's all about doing client-side apps with Angular, but using Microsoft Tech. So we're going to be Azure AD, hosting it in Azure, using Office 365 as a backend, TypeScript. We're going to go through all that. And the cool thing is that even if you don't want to register for both conferences, if you register for just the SP TechCon Dev Days, while right now it's not, you can't do this, but if it doesn't, if the workshops for the Angular conference, they're reserved right now, seats reserved for the participants of the Angular conference, but if they don't sell out, then if the workshops don't sell out, then they will open it up to just general, anybody can register for just one specific workshop. So you could go to the SP TechCon Dev Days, but show up a day early and come to my workshop and then, you know, get another 2 days of SP TechCon if you like. So
very cool.
It's all the same hotel, so you can kind of dive in and out. So it's kind of cool. But the two conferences are totally unrelated. I happen to be doing both of them. And if you're interested, just go check that out. But yeah, so this week, getting ready for everything, I'm spending a significant amount of time working on my Breeze adapter for SharePoint to be able to talk to... Right now, it talks to SharePoint 2013 and Office 365, and I've fixed a couple bugs that are in it that I've shipped. They haven't been kind of... They've been committed and rolled into the main repo for the what's called Breeze Labs, where they have like all their extensions for Breeze. But... Today, when we started this call, you were like, what are you doing? And I told you, and you're like, what are you talking about? I'm actually in a SharePoint 2010 VM because I'm trying to get it working with SharePoint 2010 finally.
Yeah, that's always painful going back to your old VMs.
It's just...
Hey, speaking of Breeze, we've got Ward Bell coming to Build and helping out with Office stuff, which will be kind of cool. You won't, if you're going to Build, you won't be able to miss him. He'll be the one wearing the big... Elvis outfits.
The best dressed.
Yeah, the best dressed, yes.
He will be the best dressed person. Yeah, he'll be at the booth. I'm looking forward to introducing him to a bunch of SharePoint folks. He is a brilliant mind.
Yeah, really nice guy. And so he's going to be helping us out a bunch and doing some express talks as well for us. So that'd be awesome.
Yeah, he's a good guy. Tonight, I'm actually got a conference call with him very late my time to work on the Breeze SharePoint stuff. He wants to see what we're doing, so.
Gotcha. Hey, F8 is kicking off today, the Facebook Developer Conference. So maybe the next show we'll have some, we should touch base on what was announced at that. I think the live stream kicks off at 9:30 Pacific time this morning.
It does.
So I'm going to tune into that and see what is going on in the world of Facebook development.
Yeah, I'd like to say there's a couple little leaks that have been coming out the last day or two that look really interesting. But I tell you what, we're sitting here. So for all the listeners, we have collected a boatload of new stuff. I wish we could have done a show last week. We have enough content right now to go through probably two or three episodes of just news related stuff. But even we have a bunch of Office 365 news we would love to talk about. But yesterday there was a very big announcement on the Azure space. So we're going to focus on the Azure space this week, and then we'll come back to what by the time it'll probably be old news. But this is something we definitely should take a look at. But yesterday, there was also another streaming event by Microsoft, and it was, I think it was about an hour long, I think.
Yeah, it was an hour. Scott Guthrie, Bill Staples, I think were the two biggies, the two sort of main presenters there. Oh, and Hanselman did the demo, yeah.
Yeah, the Hanselman was the demo guy. And it basically what Microsoft announced, or what the Azure guys announced, is something called the Azure App Service. I'm going to give it to you kind of my two cents on it. And I still have a bunch of questions, and maybe you can provide some insight to it as well. But As I've seen some people, what I think are jumping to conclusions, and be curious to see what you have to say about this, CJ, but essentially what this app service is that, you know, today, or I should say yesterday, because most of it's already effective in the portal today. So I think these changes, they were announced, and as they were announced, everything got updated. Let's say on March the 23rd, the way it was is that everything you did in Azure was all a la carte. And so if you wanted a website, you had a price associated with that. If you wanted to do something with like the mobile services that they have in Azure, you had a price associated with that. If you wanted to do something with like the API management, same deal. If you've got a handful of things, if you've got a handful of different things that you're using within your app, you've got all these different pieces, and it's kind of like a Chinese menu where you're using all these different pieces, you're going to add it all up to see how much you're actually going to be paying. But what they did yesterday is they created this new thing called the app service, and it essentially gives you little collections of things in a sense. And so what we used to call Azure websites, we now call them web apps. And web apps can, all these different apps can include pieces of each other. So for example, we have three different or four different kinds of apps that they announced. We have web apps, mobile apps, logic apps, and API apps. So let's say web apps and logic apps real quick. And if I want to go create a logic app, what a logic app is, you can think of it as kind of like a simplistic workflow. And so you have like a bunch of little connectors that they've defined for different services, things like Office 365, Salesforce, Dynamics, OneDrive, Box, you name it, even just as generic HTTP. And what you can do is inside of this, you can say, you know, I want this logic app to run every 1 minute. And when it runs, the same thing I used to create a web job for. And when it runs, I want you to go check Twitter. If you see a new tweet on this one from this one person, I want you to take that and I want you to move it down a pipeline. So think like PowerShell kind of pipelining. Hmm. So you move it down the pipeline, it then goes to the next thing. It's like, okay, we want to take that tweet that came out and I want to post it over to a list in Office 365. And then I want to also go see, associate it with a contact in Office 365 because somebody was mentioned in it. And oh yeah, by the way, I'd like to do something custom. And so in that custom, I can create a web app, which is just a little website, and I inject it inside of the logic app as just another step. So like one step is a tweet, one step is registering it with a list in Office 365, one step is going to Salesforce, one step is running my web app and then going back over to the logic app. And you get this kind of a left to right kind of viewing of building these little like connectors and pipeline of how things are going to flow together. That's just two of them. That's just web apps and logic apps. And then API apps is going to give us the ability to create our own connectors that maybe you want to go turn around and sell. So let's say if like, for example, SAP didn't exist, or let's say that
TripIt,
there you go. If TripIt didn't exist, then you could go create an API app that's just called TripIt that you could then snap it in or you can install it into your Azure subscription. You do a little configuration saying it goes to CJ's account. Here's how you do the login. And then it has all these different actions like show me all the trips or show me my next flight or show me this or show me that.
Yeah.
So
yes. The way I think about it is this is just an easier way to build apps. Not having to think of 1,000 different things and just saying, hey, look, like for most apps, you're going to need a web app. You probably got some mobile connectivity as part of it. You might need to connect to other things, right? And you probably got some logic.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of having to cobble together, you know, 10 or 15 different components to build out your app and then having to deal with all the different pricing behind that, you can just say, hey, I want to buy this one app service and I can deploy my app into it. And I get one set of pricing. And there's a bunch of different tiers. We'll get into the pricing in a second. But, you know, this way I don't have to think about like, you know, 10 or 20 different components. I can just deploy my app into one place. I get a bunch of capacity. I can scale it. And I don't have to worry about all that complexity. But the web app stuff, what used to be called websites, I guess, and mobile apps, which was the app, you know, mobile services in Azure, those were two existing capabilities. And then the API apps and logic apps are sort of new, as far as I understand, mostly new capabilities. I mean, some of the API apps, some of the connectors that you can connect to came from the BizTalk world, you know, for different sort of data interchange things and stuff like that. And then a bit of that, or that concept of connecting between different systems and transforming data between different systems, and pushing and pulling things from one place to the other was also sort of a concept that was in BizTalk. So I think that's where that where those things have come from. But you know, now they're called API apps, which are the connectors to different things, and logic apps for stringing those together and doing stuff in different series, pushing data between different connectors and things.
I was watching some of the videos from this, so I didn't get to see yesterday evening, I watched the main presentation for the whole thing, which was nice, but I mean, it was very marketing, promoted a lot of existing Azure services that were already there, like the auto scaling and stuff like that. Mm. But there are some really good, I'm going to call them bite size because that's what we usually call it. I'm not going to use snacky, but there are some good videos up on Channel 9, four different videos on Channel 9 that are actually part of Scott Hanselman's video podcast he does called Azure Fridays, which is funny because we have four things that came out on Tuesday, but regardless, he's got one on each of the different things, one on web apps, one on mobile apps, one on logic apps, and one on API apps. And I found they were nice and fairly short. So like even the web apps one was only 4 minutes. The rest of them were anywhere from 13 to 17 minutes. Mm. The one I found that was probably that was really helpful, and there was one point that was made in the logic app ones where the guest was, I think it was Josh Twist. And one of the things that he said, we could do all the same kind of stuff prior to any of this new service that was being announced. But one of the things he pointed out was that a lot of this code is stuff that we have to write every time. We have to go reach out to talk to some other service. We have to go pull something in from some API. And it's plumbing code that we don't really have to write we do have to write every time. And what this is doing is this is kind of taking that plumbing code and automating it a bit, like we could do with BizTalk, where you can say, here's the common stuff on this endpoint, and I just want to take the data that's coming from this, and I'm just going to drag it over to this field and say, map it over here.
Yeah.
And it's kind of automating that stuff. And it's not to say that you're going to build all of your apps like just dragging and dropping stuff in.
No.
It just says the repetitive stuff we're going to get rid of. So it's not like, to me, it's not like when we saw the tool called Light Switch that came out, and then everybody's like going, oh, look, you just kind of drag and drop everything and poof, you've got an app.
Yep.
But now it's not so much that, it's more that it takes away a lot of the grunt work that you have to do every time.
Yeah.
Makes it a little bit simpler. So
yeah, no, definitely. Definitely. So it just up levels it a little bit so that you're not having to reinvent the wheel.
I'm curious to see how this is. I want to learn more about it. Got a lot of questions about it. I'm curious to see how this is used. I know the packaging stuff, we haven't really mentioned any of the stuff, but how the packaging and the pricing of this is different from the a la carte model. It does simplify it quite a bit.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in a nutshell, there's basically, it's a continuation of how Azure was priced in the past, where you have, in terms of the tiering structure, so you have a free tier, a shared tier, a basic standard, and a premium tier, right? And so you get different capacities and different performance levels and different sort of, SLAs and uptime capabilities, depending on which one you're in. So for example, let's take West region pricing in US dollars for shared, which is currently only in preview. So this is, shared and free are basically for just getting started and experimenting and trying stuff out with, some development, right?
Right.
So if you want to just get started, you can do the free tier, which gives you 60 CPU minutes per day. And so these are, your app is basically on a set of hardware or virtualized hardware and shares it with other apps, right? So you get 60 CPU minutes per day, a gig of RAM and a gig of storage for $0. And then shared, you pay a little bit more than zero, and you get 240 CPU minutes per day, a gig of RAM, a gig of storage, and it's 1.3 cents per hour, which is about 10 bucks a month.
It's not bad. I mean, that's good for shared's good for like a development, or I mean, free and shared are good for development.
Yep. And so it's worth mentioning that, I mentioned you got a gig of RAM and a gig of storage and some CPU, right? But you also get a bunch of other things included with that. So you get to deploy 100 apps, for example. You get 500 active devices. You get 1 million push notifications to 500 different devices. You get 1,000 shared API calls for offline sync. You got some connectors. There's a whole ton of different included capabilities and capacity as part of that. So it's not just a gig of RAM and a gig of storage. You get, you know, a bunch of these other services as part of it. Then you go up to the basic tier where you get to choose between 1, 2, or 4 different cores and 3 different RAM levels, all the way up to 4 cores, 7 gigs of RAM, 10 gigs of storage, which is about $223 a month for the 4 core, 7 gig of RAM. Then you go up to the standard tiers, which you go 1, 2, or 4 cores, up to 7 gig of RAM, 50 gig of storage. And then premium, which again is in preview, but gives you some more capabilities. That gets you up to 4 cores, 7 gig of RAM, 250 gigs of storage, but with a whole bunch of other capabilities. Like you get, you know, unlimited active devices, 10 million pushes a month, push notifications. You get 5,000 calls per core per day to like premium connectors, things like that as part of the API apps portion of the service. 99.95 uptime SLA, 20 different staging environments for the premium tier. There's all sorts of different things. You should go check out, we'll try and put a link in the show notes to the pricing details, and it details in a lot more detail all of the ins and outs of the different pricing tiers and service capabilities. But yeah, it's a completely different way of buying Azure. And what's interesting here is it's kind of a, this is, as far as I know, and maybe some of our listeners could correct us, but as far as I know, this is kind of a, it's quite a differentiator for how you buy cloud services. I don't know if AWS and Google do it quite this way. I think they're more on the a la carte side of things rather than purchasing a set of capabilities, you know, for one price in a whole sort of more like a fixed price menu. Is that what you call it? Kind of like a fixed price menu or a set menu, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of, there's a lot of things that they've done, AWS has done, that are similar to what Azure had already done around the same kind of concept of what Microsoft's BizSpark for startups, where I think that AWS calls it their invent.
Activate. AWS Activate. Yes.
That's it.
Yep.
Yeah, so they have something similar, but it's not the same kind of packaging that we're talking about here. It's not like how, it's more for like, we'll give you a bundle of stuff and you can go through and use it as a startup. This is not designed just for startups. This is designed for really everything.
Yeah. I think developers will care about the free, shared, and potentially the basic tier. And then obviously for production use, you'd be talking about either basic for very basic apps, but probably standard as the sort of entry level for a production use app, and then probably premium for anything super serious.
Yeah. So when I saw this, I've seen a couple questions actually come up about this since then. But one of the things that I saw, when I saw the whole logic and workflow stuff, first thing I thought of is somebody who's close to like the workflow with SharePoint. I was like, I wonder how this could either be taken advantage of, or I wonder like where this actually goes and stuff. And so I know there was a few questions that came up, and there I saw one person actually on Twitter say something along the lines of, you know, hey, look, this is what we're going to be doing for Workflow vNext. And it's like, hold on a minute now. None of us have heard anything about what vNext is. And I know that just recently, Bill Baer from Microsoft was on Jeremy Thake's Office 365 Dev podcast, where they were talking a bit about vNext. And Bill Baer was like, there's really nothing to say right now because the story is still coming together.
Yeah.
It's really not going to be the story until the Ignite conference in May. So I guess I'm kind of curious to see how 365 can take advantage of this. And then, of course, where's the delineation of online versus on-prem?
Yeah, no, for sure. I think like it won't be any surprise to people that we're not dropping Workflow out of SharePoint. Absolutely. I can categorically state that will not happen. And it's one of the most highly used, you know, sort of features of SharePoint, right? Building workflows and working with business data. And so we don't have any plans to drop Workflow out of SharePoint on-prem or anything silly like that, or out of online, or do anything like that. But it does raise an interesting point around, you know, how could you use part of this, you know, either the API apps, right, or I just like to call them the connectors,
yeah,
or these logic apps, which are sort of stringing together a few things. And so it'll be interesting to see what people build out there. Let's be clear, it's not Workflow.
No.
You know, their key scenarios say visually create business processes and workflows. For anybody that does Workflow in SharePoint, they will be sorely disappointed if they look at this thinking, "Ooh, it's a new workflow." Because, you know, if you think back at maybe it was the equivalent of Workflow in SharePoint 2001, which was like you know, sequential approvals.
Yeah, we had sequential and state machine in SharePoint 2007.
Yeah, parallel approvals. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not, you don't have, you know, as you're building these logic apps, you're literally dragging and dropping a bunch of services and connecting, you know, what data from flows from one to the other. There isn't that concept of a, you know, a full sort of workflow designer or you can't do, you know, long running state-based workflows with looping and logic and branching and conditions and all of that sort of stuff. So it's definitely not a replacement for what you do in SharePoint workflows today or in, say, K2 or Nintex, for example.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's good to hear you say that. It was funny kind of watching some of the people kind of going back and forth on this. I'm curious to see how you could take advantage of this. Curious to see how on-prem guys are going to be able to deal with this as well, or even if they can.
Mm.
And this is somewhat related, somewhat unrelated. I was trying to think of a way how we could actually bring this into the into our discussion today. But just a point that I wanted to mention is a blog post that I saw yesterday, which is one of those that it's kind of right in front of your face. And then all of a sudden you see somebody write about it and you're like, holy crap, that's brilliant. Have you seen Wictor Wieland's blog post about Azure AD Premium and Dynamic?
Yeah.
Okay. So Wictor did this post recently that I don't know. I haven't been in my RSS feeds in a few days or whatever. So I don't know if this is brand new, if it's a week old or whatever. Mm. Well, it'll definitely be a week old by the time everyone hears our show here, because it'll be about a week delayed. But it's a similar kind of a concept where in Azure Active Directory, in the premium edition of Azure AD, you can create a group and then you can set up rules on that group and it will dynamically take people from your directory, from your Azure AD directory, and it will add them to the group based on the rules that are applied, that are defined in that group, that are compared against the person's properties in Azure AD. Sound familiar?
Yeah.
Yes. It's audiences in SharePoint. And so, but the thing, people have had challenges with audiences because you can only, they only get compiled, I think, like once a day or once every 2 days or something like that, or once every couple days in Office 365. And they haven't been exactly what everybody wants. But what's cool about this thing is that with these, they're updated within 15 minutes. Sometimes it seems a little more instant, but they're actually updated fairly quickly because it's designed from the ground up in Azure AD. Now, granted, they're only going to be available in Office 365 and SharePoint Online, but it's one of those Azure services that you look at in the context of Office 365 and be like, wow, this can replace something that we currently use in SharePoint.
Mm.
Then we just, instead of assigning something to a audience, we'd assign it to a group, and the membership of that group is what's going to be dynamic. It clearly, that's just an Office 365 thing. So I looked at, you kind of look at this workflow. First of all, that's a killer post by Wictor. So we'll put that in the show notes to go take a look at it. But it's one of those things, I kind of look at the logic apps. I'm like going, you know, there are probably some workflows that I've built that I'd rather build with this logic app as a logic app with a web app in it as well, and being able to pull in certain connectors. That could be pretty cool. That could be something that I could potentially take advantage of.
Mm.
Now, how would I call that from SharePoint? I don't know. I have to dig into it some more, but cool kind of concept.
Yeah, definitely. You could do things like you can add an app into SharePoint Online that, you know, adds some buttons on the ribbon and push some buttons and it takes some actions and triggers some logic apps and
clickety click
pushes some data around and things like clickety click click click. Right. It'll be interesting to see what people come up with around that. It's a nice little service. I guess if you're building a whole bunch of custom code as part of an application anyway, then outside of SharePoint and maybe surfacing part of it in SharePoint or Office 365 or your public website or wherever, then you know, like you said, it's not having to build it from scratch. You know, people were having to write code to do this before, unless you had a, you know, full-blown workflow tool that you were using. But if all you wanted to do was some of the scenarios that Hanselman showed on stage, you know, when you get an appointment scheduled or something like that, that it then, you know, text messages, you know, through one of the connectors they had there, then, you know, building stuff like that was just a bunch of boilerplate code that you had to go grab and include in your app. And now you could, you know, hook things up in a slightly more simple model.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting to see how people actually, how they use this and how they play with it a bit. Of course, you're going to have a bunch of people that will probably start complaining about it because it's not available on-prem or whatever, I mean, in terms of the Office 365 side. But I mean, this is a cloud service. This is what Microsoft has said, that this is the direction they're going. This is they're cloud first, mobile first, and we'll see where things go.
It's no different than the rest of, there's quite a lot of bits of Azure that aren't available for on-prem.
Yeah.
Right? Same sort of deal.
That's pretty cool, man. This is it's interesting. I'm really interested to see more about this when we get to Build, because I'm sure that this will be not only a hot topic at Build. There's a reason why it's being announced a month ahead of Build. So it's kind of a get it out there. Who knows? Maybe it's a get it out there, get everybody kind of digesting it. And then, oh yeah, we're going to build off of this now that you've seen this for a month. And now let's really double down on it.
Yeah, exactly. So
I have no knowledge of anything, but I'm just looking at it going, well, that's just kind of, it makes sense of how it would go.
Oh yeah, totally. I think that you're absolutely right. I've been part of the Build planning process and content and things like that. And it's shaping up to be awesome. But I think, you know, getting this out there and getting people noodling over it for a few weeks first just means they can go, you know, we can go straight into Build and build on it.
You can build. You're building Build.
Yeah. You know, get this out and then less of the news is about this stuff and focus on all the goodies on top. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. It'll be really, I'm excited to play around with this. I want to try that building a Tripit connector now that we've mentioned it in the pod show for the API apps.
It might make a lot of sense for your app.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah. Potentially. I guess we'll play around with it. There's some pretty cool connectors though. Like there's
a ton,
like Salesforce, Box, Office 365, Twitter, all those things. So it's, there's a ton of different interesting connectors. Yammer. What else is there?
Twilio, Twitter, Facebook, Marketo.
Yeah. Like that's...
It's a crazy list.
I've done a bunch of work. Yeah, I've done a bunch of work to get those. And there's going to be a little... either it's live now or it's coming, but there's going to be a marketplace for these things.
Mm-hmm.
So you could write your own connectors and get them in there eventually, I think. I don't know if it's open to third parties right now, but I'm assuming that'll eventually come.
QuickBooks, Sugar CRM,
SAP,
IBM DB2, Informix, WebSphere MQ, Hybrid Connectivity, Yammer, Oracle,
Chatter.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's going to make it pretty straightforward to connect all these things together.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where this goes. I mean, it's a killer platform. Absolutely killer platform.
MongoDB, SAP. Good God, there's a ton. It's, I think for folks doing the like the hardcore enterprise stuff, they'll see a bunch of familiarity between what they call the business to business connectors, which come from sort of the BizTalk days.
Mm.
So like AS2 connectors, Edifact, you know, EDIFact connectors, BizTalk X12 connector, things like that for doing, you know, data interchange and stuff like that.
When I was running Critical Path training, we were looking at Salesforce as our CRM solution, and we had our internet site living as a SharePoint WCM site, and our intranet was a SharePoint site.
Yep.
And we were looking to use BCS to not only connect but also feed Salesforce when someone would create a new account on our site to download something. We were going to feed. We created a new lead inside of Salesforce. It's a big programming project that I was working on to do. And I'm watching the demo of the Logic apps, and I'm just kind of shaking my head going, that what you just showed right there of adding a lead into Salesforce with some extra data is like, that piece right there was taking me the better part of 2 or 3 weeks. And you just showed it in about 25 seconds. It's like,
yeah,
now, it's great. You know, that's just the way this business goes. And it just things improve. And I'm looking at just going, I know a real world case for that. And I've needed to do that. And that you just showed how easy that was. And it wasn't just demo where I saw you put the whole thing together from scratch, and that wasn't hard.
Yeah, no, definitely. That's I guess that's the point, right? Be able to hook up your cloud services really easily. It'll be, you know, it kind of goes along similar lines to what like Zapier do, except in a more developer-y kind of manner, right?
Yep.
Zapier, for those who aren't familiar, is, you know, basically connecting cloud services together. So when something happens in one, it triggers an event, and you can take some data and push it into another. I guess the Logic apps are along similar vein, except they're not user friendly. Like you wouldn't want a business user trying to hook these things up, right? It's a developer task still.
Mm-hmm. This is in watching the samples that they were doing. I mean, I saw some of the code that they were writing. There's definitely a lot of stuff that they could do to make it a little bit easier to use, not just for end users. because I don't really think if you're inside the Azure portal, I don't think you're an end user. I think you're either a cloud architect, you're a developer, or you're an IT pro. You're not a power user. You're not an end user. You shouldn't be in, that's not what the Azure portal's for. But there were some pieces in there when I saw them kind of putting things together, and it's like just a single text box that you couldn't expand or get into. It's like, that's a lot of stuff I'd be typing in there that'd be like JSON related.
Yeah.
It's awesome, man.
It's kind of, it's a dev thing.
Yeah. Cool stuff. Hey, you got any picks this week? I have one.
Oh man, that's straight off the, you go first then. You go first.
I have a pretty cool one here. So I did this about 2 weeks ago. I did it. I ran a 15K.
Congratulations.
And I was actually pretty disappointed in my time. It was warmer than I had been training. I was dehydrated. It was tough. It was a tough day. It was a PR for me, a personal record, but it was not, if I had not gotten a PR, it would have been horrible. But anyway, there was somebody else just completed a nice race, and they did it actually today, March 25th. They did it today. You know what happened?
No.
It took them 11 years, but NASA's Opportunity Mars rover just finished a 26.2 marathon from the moment it landed 11 years ago.
Oh, that's amazing.
Isn't that cool?
That's super cool.
Now, the pace sucks, but first thing to do a marathon out of this world.
Hey, I tell you what, it did it faster than anybody else. Can't argue with that.
That's true. Right now, it's got a UR.
It's got a universal record.
It's got a GR. A galaxy record.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah, so I do have a pick. I don't know if you follow this guy on YouTube, but there's a great channel called Smarter Every Day.
Ooh.
You heard of this guy?
No, I haven't.
So he vlogs, I guess. Is that?
Yep.
Man, I'm showing my age.
Nope, that's good.
He vlogs on YouTube, and the channel is called Smarter Every Day. And I came across it recently because this guy is fascinating. He picks all sorts of really interesting subjects, but he's just kicking off a new series about space. And the reason he's doing it, one is because he's really into it, of course, but also there is about to be a mission. So it is one of the astronauts going up. One of the Kelly brothers.
Yep.
So Scott and Mark Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I think it's Scott. Hold on.
Yes.
I get confused.
Nope, it's Scott.
Scott who's going, right?
Yep, Scott's going up.
But they're not going on just any old ordinary trip, right? He's going up for a year.
6 months longer than anybody else.
Yeah. And what's interesting is, right, from a science point of view, science, yo.
nice Breaking Bad reference there.
Breaking Bad reference, yeah, nice. I'm glad you got that. Is because he's a twin, they're measuring, they're baselining both of the twins while they're on Earth. And then one's going to go, you know, Scott's going up for a year, and they're going to draw blood during that year. They're going to do all these tests during the year, and they're going to mirror it back on Earth as well. And they're going to watch the physiological changes and all that sort of stuff. And because they're biologically a lot closer than the majority of humans, because they're sort of, you know,
twins.
It might be, it'll be really interesting to watch and see, you know, what the differences are of long duration space. And the whole thing is like getting ready to go to Mars, right? So learning more about humans and space and long duration space travel. But anywho, I digress. So Smarter Every Day has a new series starting up on this. And their first one entitled How to Fly a Spaceship to the Space Station, Smarter Every Day number 131. He's spending time in Houston and talking to astronauts, spending time in The Sims. Half this video was from inside a Soyuz capsule with Scott Kelly talking about the mission and all this sort of stuff. So for anybody that nerds out about this stuff like you and I do, it is a must-see. And go subscribe to the channel because it's a multi-part series, and he's just launched the first part about a day ago. So it's super interesting, I suspect.
That's awesome. I haven't seen this yet. This is a... I'm going to dive into this. Yeah, I knew about the story about the whole thing with, you sent me the link. Yeah, trust me, I was already looking at it while you were musing on just a minute ago.
Cool.
What's really cool is you can, like, I know Scott Kelly is already in quarantine. You can talk to him via Twitter and stuff, but there's some really cool, I watched a show on NASA about it recently where they were saying how the big thing that they're trying to learn is not just, they know that people, when you're in space for 6 months, things change with your body.
Yep.
Even just for a couple of weeks, you know, you have your muscles are atrophied, you have trouble walking when you land, your eye changes shape, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But What they're not sure is, like, I guess this is part with going to Mars, is they're not sure if there's like the law of diminishing returns happens. Like, do you get to a certain point and then it levels out and then you're good?
Well, I'm just assuming eventually you just sort of turn into this sack made of skin with a bunch of bones floating around inside it.
What's that movie?
Yeah, Wall-E. Everybody's just like these gelatinous blobs floating around on those chairs.
It is Wall-E. It is Wall-E. Yeah, yeah, because it's the little white thing, the Pixar movie Wall-E.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a little robot guy. Yeah, it'll be really cool. Like, it's a long mission. And mentally, like, you gotta, I not having a warm shower for a year.
Yeah.
How would you feel about that?
Well, it's not so much about me, it's about being around other people.
Well, I'm sure you bathe. I mean, you bathe, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But man, I love like cranking up the heat in the shower and sitting in it for 20 minutes, you know, and
mm-hmm.
or 25 minutes maybe. And so just missing things like that on Earth is going to be very, very crazy. Actually, I went and saw Commander Hadfield did a talk in Seattle a while back. And he was saying, you know, even after, as soon as you enter microgravity, right, and you're in orbit, your body starts changing. And so even when you go to the bathroom for the first time, you're basically like peeing out a whole lot of unused calcium from your bones. You know, within a matter of hours, your body's starting to change.
God.
So it happens really fast because there's just no weight on your body. You know, you don't need big bones anymore.
Yeah.
Your skeleton is not as useful.
It's fascinating. It's cool stuff.
Yeah. So anyway, so Smarter Every Day. It's got a bunch of interesting topics, not just space stuff. So check it out.
No coincidence. Both of us have space links as our picks. Last week, I got to go to, I went down to the NASA Kennedy Space Center down in Cape Canaveral and got to see Atlantis up close. Holy moly, I'm not ruining it for anybody, but the presentation is epic. Absolutely epic.
Last time I saw that thing, it was lifting off the pad for the last shuttle mission. And I really want to visit.
It's worth it.
I've seen Discovery, right? I visited Discovery in DC, but I want to go see Atlantis and also
Endeavor.
In LA, Endeavor in LA, yeah.
So I've seen Atlantis and Endeavor. I need to see Discovery. And I've seen the Enterprise. That's in New York.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Yeah, Enterprise as well, yeah.
I saw the Enterprise when it was in DC and Dallas before Discovery took its place, and then they moved up to New York. But
I've seen two of the Saturn Vs, two of the remaining Saturn Vs. Mm. There's a third which I haven't seen, which is on my bucket list, and I've got to check out the other two shuttles.
Mm.
But I have seen Buran, which was the Russian space shuttle, which I don't think I'll ever get to see again. But that was a huge tick box for me.
That was cool. You know what I did see last week? Last thing, and then I guess we can wrap it.
Yeah.
You know what I did see last week is I did the up close and personal tour at Kennedy, and that's worth it. It's definitely worth it if you're interested in going. You get right up close to the pads. You get right up close to the tracking camera station. It's very cool. But
keep talking.
Yeah, get this. So the but. Let's see how serious some space geeks are that we have on our show. That we have listeners on our show. As the bus is going through, it drives right next to the VAB, the Vehicle Assembly Building.
Mm-hmm.
And the doors were open, and you could see that they were doing all of the reconstruction. There's four bays inside the VAB, and they were doing all the stuff modifying one of the bays.
For SLS.
And then they didn't say anything about it on the tour, but I look out the other side of the window of the bus, and there's a little Boeing building. And guess what it says on the side of it?
X-37?
Home of the X-37-B.
Yeah.
I was like, I told you, Stephen, I'm like, look, look. And the tour guide's like, yeah, I can't tell you anything about that.
That's pretty secret.
That's the super secret Air Force shuttle.
That's like a little mini unmanned Air Force shuttle that recently spent 2 years in space.
It's the size of a city bus.
Yeah.
There's pictures of it. You search for it online. They've got tons of pictures online, but they will never tell you what they're doing. They will tell you when it goes up and they tell you when it comes down because all the hobbyists can track it.
But it launches on the top of a rocket too, much like a satellite, right? And then it shoots up, orbits the Earth for a couple of years, which like, whoa.
Yeah. And comes back.
And then, and does stuff. God knows what.
Yeah.
Like, who knows? Probably, you know, taking photos of blades of grass in your backyard.
Or saddling up next to a Chinese satellite.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like sort of shimmying around in orbit and figuring out what everybody's up to. And then it comes back and it's reusable, which is pretty sweet.
Yeah, goes up on a Delta IV. It's pretty cool.
That's gnarly.
All right. So much for a 30-minute show.
Yeah, sorry about that, everyone.
It's all good.
We're nerding out a little bit too much on extracurricular activities and interests.
You throw space in there and you and I can just go on forever.
Oh, God, don't start. Yeah.
All good, man.
All right. Well, thanks for the show, AC.
Yeah, man. Talk to you soon, CJ. We'll see everybody next week, hopefully.
Cheers.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAVE or an MP3 file and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for The Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can find us on Facebook searching for The Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.